Welcome back to another glass of Shirley Fay. Today we are talking about orgasms, porn, relationships, really everything under the sun. So I'm chatting with my really good friend Madeline. If you don't already follow her, I have all of her platforms in the show notes, and today's going to be a really fun episode. We've been trying to do this episode for quite a while, and I'm pumped that we were finally able to do it, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. So let's get started. I'm here with Madeline today. I'm so excited that we are finally recording this podcast episode because we've been talking about this for a long time. So just to give you like a little bit of backstory on how me and Madeline met, it was actually not that long ago. We met at a, I actually reached out to her to see if her and her significant other Mitchell would be interested in modeling for a workshop that that we were hosting. So that's kind of how we met. So we met at a bridal store. That was the first time that we met because she was trying
Much fangirling in the car.
She was trying on a wedding dress. And I was with Molly, the co-host, and she just came in and tried on the dress, and I just loved her right away. And I basically told her that we were gonna be friends, and she was kind of like, okay, that's cool.
I was like keeping it cool, but realistically, I went home and was like, Mitchell, the coolest girl in the world, wants to be my friend. I was really jazzed.
Anyways, she modeled for me and Molly at the workshop, and then after that, I'm pretty sure we've been talking every day.
Pretty much every day.
Yeah.
I miss you on the days we don't talk.
So she came over. This was like back when we were allowed to have people over, and we had a huge conversation about sex and everything sex and how we are both very, very open when it comes to that topic. And I thought that it would make a really great podcast episode because I have quite a few friends in my life that are really open to talking about sex. And I think that it's so important because I also have other people in my life that don't really like to talk about the subject. They think that it's a little bit, you know, they want to keep it more private, and that's totally okay too. But the people that are open about it and that want to hear about it love to talk about it too. Like, the sex is 100% one of my favorite topics to talk about. So the fact that you were just so open about it too, I was like, okay, so we're going to be friends now. Like, it's like a done deal.
Yeah. Like, I think gradually our voices just got like louder and louder. Yes. And louder with excitement.
I remember when we were sitting at your kitchen table, that one time that me and Josh were over, and Josh and Mitch were having a conversation, and we were literally just sitting like across from them having a conversation about sex. And we were like, I remember screaming something along the lines of like anal penetration.
Yes.
And
yes.
Both of them just turned and looked at us like, what the fuck are you talking about? Because they were talking about something in regards to like engineering.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That.
Mitchell was probably like, what's happening here?
And then all of a sudden I just screamed anal penetration. And that was pretty much the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
There, because they were like, what's happening? So yeah, that's kind of how me and Madeline's relationship kind of formed, and
that's how we kicked it off. Yeah.
Through that. So I've invited her on the podcast today because I want to open up the conversation about sex again. You guys might not know this, but the last episode that I had about sex with Molly was one of the most successful episodes. Apparently you guys really want to hear about sex. And the last time that I posted a poll about what you guys wanted to hear and what you guys, I guess, like wanted to have as content on the podcast, one of the most, I guess, the most talked about topic was sex. You guys want to hear about sex. So I'm very open about it. So we're going to talk about it again.
We're going to talk about it. Yep. Everything's on the table here.
There you go. So Madeline, I'm going to get you to introduce yourself first. For those of you who don't know Madeline, tell me a little bit about you.
Okay. So my name's Madeline Taylor, and I am relatively new to New Brunswick. My partner and I came to New Brunswick in early April 2020 from Toronto. Both of us grew up in a pretty tiny town in Ontario, and we moved to Toronto for school. And we loved Toronto. It was a great place to do our like earliest 20s growing up stuff. But eventually we had dreams for home ownership and things like that. So we ended up finding a lovely spot in New Brunswick, our little outpost. And we love New Brunswick. We've really found it to be a wonderful place to be. And it led me to so many incredible things, one of them being Charlie. So I have a bachelor's of science in psychology and women and gender studies. And in my career side of my life, I do all sorts of creative things, bit of photography, bit of social media, bit of design work. Anything creative is kind of what I like to do.
I'm going to plug her again. She's actually the person that designed my Keepsake Bodies logos. If you guys don't follow Keepsake Bodies, you definitely should. It's just at Keepsake Bodies on Instagram. And she was the one that designed the logo. It's absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
So she has a huge creative side to her. And that's kind of how we really connected on things, which was amazing. Obviously,
yeah.
Brought us here. So
yes.
So one thing that we really wanted to talk about today was the last time that she was over, we had a huge conversation about her women and gender studies, and I thought that it was so interesting. So tell me a little bit about what you learned in your women and gender studies, and I guess like what your focus is on, and maybe like some projects that you did that you might not have ever thought about doing prior to taking this course.
Yeah. So when I first went to university, I was really focused on the science aspect of things. And so I thought I would do psychology and maybe mix it in with like a bio or I don't know, something that would work well with psych. And when I couldn't get into chemistry, I ended up in a women and gender studies class. And I was like that person.
Too extreme.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I really wasn't that happy to be in this women and gender studies class, to be honest. I always thought like, you know, who goes to university and then like takes women and gender studies? Like that wasn't me. But I ended up there in this class and I knew the moment I sat down that was like a safe room to be in. Like, you know, when you can sense that,
yes,
that like, this is like a safe space. Mm-hmm. And it was. And then my professor started talking and I was like, okay, what the heck? This is something that it was basically like all of the thoughts that I had thought about the world my whole life. Like, why is the world unfair? Why do some people have, you know, more opportunity and some people don't? Why do people care about certain things? Or why are people, you know, why is the world cruel to some and, you know, easier for other people? All of a sudden, like that was being put on the table and I was suddenly starting to understand why. I was like, I grew up in a really small town. You know, not very like country town, not very diverse, very white. And, you know, I was studying in downtown Toronto. And so I was suddenly around like a diverse population for the first time in my life. And I really liked it. I loved like learning about new cultures, but I couldn't really understand why some people didn't. And then all of a sudden, like being in this classroom, we were talking about all these topics and I suddenly had the vocabulary to really talk about the things that I had always like thought in my mind. Why do women have less opportunity than men? You know, why do people like not like gay people? Like, why is that something that even exists in this world? Because to me, I was like, everyone is equal. Everyone should be loved. And you know, I want to make sure that I'm living my life in a way that, you know, that is open to people of all kinds, like all walks of life. And so some of the things that I learned in my degree, like I never really thought that I would end up studying, but I ended up studying them. One of them being I was in multiple courses where we talked about, porn. And I entered university thinking porn was like something that was bad. I watched porn. Did I feel good about watching porn? No.
Yeah.
No, I felt super guilty about it. And then being in this classroom where, you know, you're a group of, you know, 30 to 50 other students and we're all talking openly about what we like to masturbate to, you know, and I think that's like a really freeing first off, it has to be a really safe space because you're talking about some of the most intimate parts of yourself.
Absolutely.
And you're talking about it with your professor, which is like another, like that's a whole other thing. And I have to say, like, women in gender studies professors are the coolest professors that you could ever encounter.
I feel like they have to be, though, because they are the ones creating this safe space.
Yeah.
If they're awkward or not really into the topics that they're teaching, these are really intimate topics. Like,
totally.
They have no choice
yeah.
to be comfortable teaching. It's just like sex ed teachers. I had one sex ed teacher when I was in middle school that was the most awkward person to be teaching sex ed. And it kind of ruined my experience in that sense, because it was like everything that I was learning was very much by the book. There was
yeah.
no like personality. And I guess like when you're a kid, like obviously when you're learning sex ed in school, it's very different than when you're learning any kind of sex outside of school, because there is that, you know, consent that has to come from the parents, and it's definitely taught in a much different way. But there was no like, there was no personality when it came to teaching it. It was very much like, okay, you put the condom on the banana, that's all I learned. And I know that I've mentioned this before in multiple of my episodes, but that's really like, when I think about sex ed, that's all I learned.
Yeah. And you know, when the person who's standing up at the front of the room, when you can tell and you can like get that vibe that person's uncomfy with the topic, mm-hmm. that create like that affects you. And
because
they're
the person that's supposed to be teaching you about
it. Exactly.
If they're uncomfortable teaching you, then you're going to be uncomfortable learning about it.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like an instructor is really a facilitator for your learning. And so being in a classroom where we can openly talk about, you know, the use of dildos in porn, in lesbian porn. We're talking about the use of dildos in lesbian porn. We're talking about representation in porn that has, you know, trans performers. Talking about, you know, race in porn and how fetishes in porn. And yeah, we're just like having these like big discussions about, you know, representation and, you know, sex work and what that means. We had a sex worker come in and talk to us about her experiences, both as being, you know, someone who was working at like a strip club, and also like her other experiences, you know, providing services with clients of all genders. And it was really interesting to kind of like have that those connections and have those experiences where you can really just, you know, you can ask questions. Obviously, you're in university, so you want to make sure that your questions are intelligent. But yeah, it was a really great experience. Some of the other things that we talked about, I mean, we would talk about anything under the sun, really. We talked about how a lot of the types of labor that women are expected to do in their lives are unpaid, like emotional labor, aesthetic labor. Why is it that, you know, men can get out of bed and show up to work and no one's going to say like, you look really tired today. But women, we spend hours, you know, sometimes doing our makeup, doing our hair, and to look presentable. And like, who decides what presentable is?
That's true.
And what is like the financial impact of those things? Mm-hmm. Like, why is it that, you know, women, if you were to show up to work, and this has happened to me, like shown up for work, like fresh faced, no makeup, you know, hairs in ponytail, a low product day, I guess, where I'm spending very like little money, or, you know, using no makeup, no hairspray, nothing like that. And it's like, it costs me nothing to look this way, but the way that that's perceived by everyone in my office is that I'm sick today, or that I'm tired, that I shouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, why does the world push that on women? And not just women, but like anyone who, you know, has a more feminine identity. Why is that like pushed upon us? Yeah, we talked about so many different topics, and I think ultimately, I grew up, I mean, the reason I'm so okay to talk about sex in such a really open way is because my mom was the kind of person who was like, sex would be a topic that is brought up at the dinner table.
Yes.
You know, like we're just like talking about sex over our, you know, our soup and our grilled cheeses.
And
so,
I love talking to someone else who has had the same experience, because it was the same way in my household. My mom, and I know that I've mentioned this before, but my mom, or my parents as a whole, were just very, very, very open when it came to the topic of sex, because they didn't want they didn't want me to get information somewhere else. Because when you're a kid, if you're not getting the information that you need from your parents, you're going to look for it somewhere else. So my mom didn't want me to have to do that. So any questions that I had at any point in time, she would always answer them for me. And it was very real answers.
Yeah.
And I remember there was one specific time when I think I was probably like, maybe like 10, I would say. I looked up on the internet, what is 69?
Ha.
And I didn't realize that like when you would go click like the search engine, that like your most recent searches would pop up. So I went downstairs, the computer was downstairs at the time, and I went downstairs and my mom was like, Charlie, like, do we need to have a conversation? And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, do you want me to explain to you what 69 is? And I was like, no, Mom, I know what it is. And I just ran upstairs, really embarrassed, obviously. But yeah, like, I grew up in a very, very open household. And I know that I'm very lucky to have that because a lot of people did not have that growing up.
No, and I think when I was younger and super, you know, I didn't think of sex as like a taboo subject. I think that made me like a really precocious child. And I was also really in tune with my sexuality from a really young age. I think like having that knowledge gave me that power to like feel okay, you know, looking, my mom would encourage me to like look at my vagina in the mirror to like know, there was never a point in my life where I didn't know like where my clit was, where my urethra was, like, and we would use the scientific terms for everything, like a penis was a penis, a vagina was a vagina, and I think, you know, there's a lot of good in that because you know, heaven forbid if there was ever anything that was abusive in my life, like I knew how to describe it to an adult. I knew to say like someone was inappropriate with me. Mm-hmm. And I think it gave me a lot of power as a young woman, like feeling okay and comfortable in all sorts of situations to say penis and do it with a straight face.
Because
like
it wasn't a bad word.
It wasn't a bad word.
Exactly. It was the same way for me. Like I grew up in a household that none of these things were bad words.
Yeah.
Like a penis was a penis, like you said, a vagina was a vagina, your breasts were your breasts or your boobs or whatever it may be, but it wasn't, we didn't have these like different terms to use because my mom always believed in the fact that we should be using the term for it and to not make it a bad word.
Yeah, and I think it was good to know that like there was nothing to be embarrassed about.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think that like really led me to having a really healthy relationship with my body in a sexual way. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I started masturbating really early. And I think, I mean, like most women, I think, figure out like that it feels good when you touch in a certain place. Mm-hmm. And they may not be able to even label it as masturbating.
I know that I wasn't at the time. I didn't know that I was masturbating.
And I didn't either. It wasn't until I was probably closer to 10 that I learned the word masturbate. And I thought it was such a hideous word.
Yes.
I was like, what the hell?
Yes.
Why would you call it that? It's so fun and it feels so good. Why would you call it masturbate? Like the word even now, like as a 24-year-old, I'm like, I still hate that word. Like, I wish we could call it something different.
I completely agree.
Because like, ew. And yeah, like I remember the first time I ever had a conversation with a girlfriend about masturbating. I was in eighth grade. And she was so embarrassed to disclose to me that she masturbated. And I remember being like, yeah, like, I don't really do that. Meanwhile, full well knowing I've been doing that since I was like probably 4 or 5 years old, like literally as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. And I remember like for me, it was something that I like – maybe this is like too much information, but it was something that I used kind of to help me like fall asleep. It was like a cozy thing that I would do when I was alone. And obviously like we had conversations about, you know, when it is appropriate to touch yourself, but like my mom never made me feel guilty about doing it. It was something that was something private. It was something for me. And yeah, like that was what I needed to really, I guess, start exploring. And it was so healthy because by the time I was ready to start allowing someone else into that space, I knew exactly what I wanted.
I feel the same way. I always felt like when I was a teenager, I would have conversations with, you know, like my friends about it and that kind of stuff. And at that point in my life, there was no one else in my life that had mastered, like, quote unquote, masturbated before, or like knowingly masturbated before.
And the weird part is that all the boys masturbated.
Yes.
Like, that was so normal. Mm-hmm. The boys would talk about masturbating they would never say masturbate. Maybe they hate the word masturbate too. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But like they would say, jack off or whatever. And that was something that would be like thrown around in the lunchroom.
Yeah.
Like that was so casual. And the girls would like, you would hear it and I would never feel embarrassed for the guy who was talking about jacking off. Like that was almost like something to show like your sexual power as like a 13-year-old kid.
Yeah.
But exactly. For a girl to say she masturbated, like, no, yuck. Like that was seen as embarrassing. And I think that's a really like unfair thing to like shove on women when already they're like, we know later in life that there is the orgasm gap exists. Like we as women should be celebrating other women, you know, getting to know their bodies on their own time. On their own time frame.
Absolutely.
in their like own safe space.
Yes.
Because there's so many benefits to masturbation.
Oh,
so many.
I remember the first time that I had an orgasm by myself. And I'm very lucky in the sense that I was able to explore myself, and I bought my first vibrator when I was like 13 or 14. I remember going to Walmart and I bought a cock ring that was a vibrating cock ring. I didn't know that it was a cock ring. It just kind of like, It was a thing, and it vibrated, and I was like, okay.
Yeah,
like,
it'll do the trick.
And like, let me tell you, the cashier at Walmart gave me the dirtiest looks that you could possibly imagine. I thought maybe she was going to ID me, but like, obviously that's not a protocol that they have to do. So she didn't, but I just remember feeling so embarrassed to go to Walmart and to buy a vibrator.
I mean, kudos to you to do that. Like, yeah. Cause I was from a super like open home life about sex and everything, and you know, I did that, but I definitely remember the first time buying like condoms, for example, and like that was a mortifying experience. I will remember for the rest of my life. So
I feel that too.
High five to you for doing that.
But no, I remember and I was never shamed for it, because when I bought it, obviously I'm the fucking worst person when it comes to hiding any of my shit. So I bought it. I went home, obviously tried it right away because I was really excited about it. And I left it on the counter and with the box and everything.
Nice.
And I went back downstairs because it was in the bathroom downstairs. And I went back downstairs later that day and I found my mom looking at the box and reading the back of the box, probably being like, what the fuck is my daughter doing with a vibrating cock ring? Like,
yeah, that's a little bit
that
concerning.
That was what she was asking herself. But I barged in and I was like, I'm allowed to have these things too. And she was like, okay, we'll put it away before your sister finds it. And that was the end of the conversation. We never talked about it again. There was no shaming me for the fact that I had bought one. There was no shaming me for the fact that I was masturbating, that I was exploring my sexuality. So it was, she very much created, and I will thank her till the day I die, she very much created this safe space for me that I was allowed to explore my own body in my own home, even though I was living with my parents, even though I was living with my sibling. So it was really nice for me in that sense, because I spent, you know, like those years, like really exploring myself and discovering what an orgasm felt like for the first time ever. And like, if you've, you know, there's a lot of women that still haven't orgasmed before because their body parts work differently and they just haven't explored that part of them yet. But I feel really lucky that I was able to do that at such a young age, so that just like you said, when I invited someone else to be in that space with me, I knew exactly what I wanted. I knew exactly what I wanted it to feel like, to feel good, so that I could orgasm, that I could achieve that. And I remember, again, like the first time that I ever felt that, like I felt like a teenage boy in the sense that like in like the stereotype that like, it's just teenage boys that masturbate, and when they discover masturbation, it's like, oh my God, this is the best thing in the entire universe. Obviously, that wasn't talked about in the feminine world when I was growing up. It's a little bit more talked about now, but when I was growing up, that wasn't really talked about. So I felt like I was doing something wrong. I felt like, you know, like, why am I masturbating like 3 times a day? Like, when I discovered how to orgasm, oh my, like, I'm pretty sure like my organs were numb at that point. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I've been there. Yeah. And I think that like the best part about having those experiences really like whenever they happen, because I think for me, like I've always had a high sex drive and we can talk about that later, but like I've always been someone who really enjoys sex. And I think whenever that exploration happens for you, like for me, it happened when I was pretty young, but for other women, it might happen a lot later in life. You know, it can happen like after your 20s. Like if you, it can happen whenever you make space and time for yourself to explore.
I really, 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 really want to make that clear. We are talking about masturbation and doing all these things and exploring at such a young age. But if you haven't done that yet,
yeah.
Or if you haven't created that space, or if you haven't felt comfortable enough to be able to create that space for yourself, that is 100% okay. And you should not feel guilty about it. Just because we're talking about our own personal experiences doesn't mean that our own personal experiences are the correct way to go about things and all of that kind of stuff. We're just talking about from our own personal standpoint and what we went through. But if you haven't had, if you're still not comfortable with creating that space yet, you should not feel guilty about it.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like that's a really good point. I read in a book recently that it was talking about body parts, and it just like really hit home for me. And it was kind of that, I don't know if anyone's ever felt like shame about the way that their genitals look, but it was essentially that, you know, everyone has the same parts. They're all just organized differently. And
yes.
I feel like that's such a great thing to, I mean, it can be used in so many different contexts. And I feel like sexuality is one of those things. You know, we all possess sexuality, and sexuality means something different for everyone.
100%.
And our sexualities can be organized differently. Like
sex
some
is not just penetrate, like
no
penis and vagina penetration. Like that's not,
no.
That,
and
it's,
you know,
such a much more broadened topic.
That was definitely something that, opened my eyes when I was, you know, studying in school. I remember meeting someone for the first time who, identified as asexual. And that was something that I had never even heard of before. For those of you who don't know, someone who's asexual is someone who has, who basically has an identity that doesn't feel desire or the urge to have sex in the same way that most people feel. So, you know, someone who wants to have a relationship where they abstain from sex, or they have sex differently, or, you know, they negotiate sex in a different way than the majority of couples. And it was a really eye-opening experience to have a conversation with someone like that, because I was someone who, you know, I always loved sex. And so learning about that really opened my eyes, because I didn't even realize that that was something that existed in this world. And yeah, I would say like that was really like pivotal for me to learn that, you know, sexuality is really, you know, it's a spectrum.
Oh,
and
100%.
And like there, I don't even know if it's a spectrum. I had a professor who said that sexuality isn't even a spectrum, it's a galaxy. And I think that was like,
that's right.
Yeah, like there are so many places that you like, so many places that you could fall on, you know, in this like big, beautiful universe of identities. And it's really up to you to define, where you end up on in that galaxy. But for me, I always considered myself as someone who, really enjoyed sex. And for a long time, especially when I was younger, I did, like, you consider that to be a bad thing. And I did feel guilty about the amount that I masturbated. I did feel like there wasn't power in that. And the power in the way that I enjoyed sex and the way that I experienced, you know, sex with myself and sex with other people, that came much later in my life. Yeah, so I think that being someone who explored my body at an early age really set me up for success once I introduced a partner to the mix, because I felt confident in, you know, telling them what felt good because I knew what felt good. And I felt confident showing them my body because I had seen my body. You know, I had like sat spread eagle in front of like a floor length mirror without any pants on. And I had like seen what a partner would eventually see. And I think that really gave me a lot of peace because,
gave you a lot of power.
It did
as well.
It did.
Because you are not only knowing what you like, but you are now, you now have the ability to teach others what you like as well.
Yeah.
And that is huge when it comes in the sexual world.
Yes. And, you know, I noticed that there was a discrepancy between my like early sexual experiences and the experiences of my girlfriends who, you know, maybe hadn't done that same level of exploration. And what I noticed was that, you know, I was orgasming a lot of the time, and surely there were like times where I didn't. And you know, I'm definitely a believer that like sex doesn't actually always have to end in an orgasm.
No,
you know, you can have a really incredible experience. And you know, not, you know, this idea of like completion only happens when, you know, an orgasm is achieved, I think is, kind of like a really not dangerous, but like it's not a great way to approach like a sexual encounter because, you know, there's a lot of ways that a sexual encounter can be wonderful and lovely and end, you know, with mutual pleasure. And it doesn't have to be this, like, this final result.
Absolutely.
But what I was noticing was that like a lot of my friends weren't having orgasms, and they also were the same friends who were, you know, not open about talking about their experiences masturbating. They, you know, said that they didn't masturbate. And I think that really led to them not having experiences where they could tell their boyfriends or their partners like what they wanted or what they needed. And a lot of times I don't know if they really knew what they wanted.
Yeah. And I think that the conversation is just not normalized enough either.
No.
Is that there's like this uncomfortability between, you know, you and who could be your partner at the time, that it's sex just happens.
Yeah.
It just happens. There's no talking about it. It's like, there's no like, it just happens like it would in a movie. And that's just not like,
yeah.
it sometimes it does, don't get me wrong. Sometimes, you know, like you have a hookup and you don't remember much the next morning, but you do remember the fact that you guys were making out in the hallway and it made it to the bedroom and then things went on from that. But sometimes it doesn't happen that way. Sometimes it starts as a conversation.
Totally.
And then that conversation leads into sex, and it leads into some kind of pleasure. Maybe it doesn't lead into vagina, penis, penetration sex, but maybe it leads into something else that you would consider sexual activity in that sense, and bringing you closeness.
Totally. I have like so many thoughts swirling in my head right now of like where we can go from here. But like, yeah, oh man. Like I totally agree with you. And I think one of the things that we were totally missing from our sex education, if it happened, and for me, I don't even know if I could classify it as sex education. It was more like how to use birth control and all the like types of birth control that exists in this world. And that's about it. But consent was something that was not talked about. And, you know, that is such a huge aspect to having like a healthy relationship with your body and with your partner, if you're, you know, having partnered sex. This was another topic that I learned about, but also researched and did a few projects on when I was studying at the University of Toronto. We were given an opportunity to kind of do a creative project, any kind of creative project we wanted. And I decided to do a photo essay on what consent looked like in heterosexual relationships, long-term ones, you know, couples who had been in relationships for at least 3 months. And so they had multiple sexual encounters with each other. And I would go in and I would photograph them, you know, having some sexy time. And we
that is so interesting.
It was really, really cool. Wow. It was really, really cool. And it was such a, I think it was a bonding experience for me with the couples that I was photographing. But basically the shoot started out with me kind of having a conversation with the couple about what consent meant for them in their relationship. Because what I was interested in learning about was how gender stereotypes and gender expectations of like what it means to be a woman who's negotiating sex and what it means to be a man negotiating sex, or a male, like a male identifying person or a female identifying person negotiating sex, what that means for consent. And it was a really great exercise for me because I started to realize and kind of unpack all of the things that had been pushed upon me by society just because I identified as a woman. And what I discovered was that a lot of couples are doing it right, but there's almost too many ways that it can go wrong, especially with, you know, people who aren't in those long-term relationships. Because what I found was that after a period of time, like those negotiations of consent and those conversations, they kind of fall to the wayside because you start to really rely on those unspoken means of communication. So, you know, body language and, you know, undressing each other. And once you get into a rhythm, those consent becomes a lot more nonverbal, I guess. And, you know, that isn't to say that it always should be that way. Though that was just what I discovered when I interviewed those couples. And I mean, it was really awesome to photograph them and, you know, various areas. It was so fun. I'd love to continue doing that. but what I really found was that what makes consent so challenging is that there are so many more things at play than just, okay, we're two people who want to have sex. And when it comes to being a woman, there are so many things that society tells you about what sex should mean for you and what sex is and how you should get sex and what you should be during that sexual encounter. And so what I kind of discovered is that as a woman, there are so many things in society that say that you should be, you should say like, no, like you shouldn't be really that interested in sex. What does that mean if you're interested in sex, if you want to have sex, if you're the one pursuing a man? What does that mean for his masculinity if you're the one pursuing him? And there's this idea that like you're supposed to, if you're in a sexual encounter, if you're, you know, in a sexual encounter with a relatively new person, should you be saying yes right away? Or should you be, you know, saying no at first? So then, and then that creates this scenario where a man gets used to, you know, pushing for sex because what does it mean if you say yes right away? And yeah, like it was really interesting to kind of have those conversations and hear from, you know, some of the couples that I worked with. I had a male partner say to me that he disclosed that he had felt pressured to have sex so many times in his life because if he said no and he didn't pursue a sexual encounter, that he was ridiculed for being less masculine. And, you know, it's the same feeling that women feel where, you know, you can't be too eager because what does that mean? And I just really wanted to challenge those notions. I want there to be a world where it's totally normal to be in a situation where you're ready to have sex and you just straight up have an open conversation about it. And it doesn't ruin the mood. It's considered sexy. And
100%. There is nothing sexier to me than talking about sex. Like,
yeah.
Let's have a conversation about it. Tell me what your kinks are.
Totally.
Tell me what turns you on. Tell me what turns you off. Like, what do you not want me to do?
Exactly. And I think a lot of couples like are a little bit unsure about having those conversations just because it isn't normalized. And, you know, people might not feel like they have the vocabulary or the experience to talk about what they like and what they don't like. And there are some really great resources that you can do. I mean, when Mitchell and I, so a little bit backstory of Mitchell and I, we were sexual partners when we were in high school. And we dated for over a year in high school, and we did a lot of exploring during that time, and we ended up ending the relationship when Mitchell went off to university. He went to the University of Toronto for engineering, and a year later I ended up at the same university, but yeah, we just didn't end up reconnecting, but we did stay friends. And then once we were both done school, we ended up reconnecting as adults, and you know, here we are today. And that second, so we had had like quite a few sexual experiences as teenagers, but obviously it's a little bit different once you have your own house and you don't have to worry about parents walking in. Mm-hmm. And we sat down and had those conversations. We did, there's like a sort of like a questionnaire that you can do online that kind of lists like pretty much everything that I could really think of under the sun that has to do with sex, like, you know, gets into just like your quote unquote, like regular sex stuff, you know, all the different, you know, missionary, doggy style, going down on each other, 69, which I know Charlie.
We all know that I hate 69.
Yeah, Charlie hates 69, but like, okay, sorry. Like, I'm here to say that I think 69 is pretty freaking sweet.
Listen, this is my opinion on 69. If you haven't listened to the last sex podcast, you would not know my opinion. So let me tell you again, 69 for me is the position that you're using when you're still living at your parents' place because you're trying to finish each other off so quickly that you're doing it at the same fucking time. It's not comfortable for me. I can't concentrate on sucking dick while someone's going down on me. Like, I need to concentrate. Like, I need to concentrate on what I'm thinking about. Like, it needs to, it needs to be rhythmic. And it's not rhythmic if I'm also sucking dick at the same time.
Oh my God. Okay, so.
It's not the same.
That is so funny because Mitchell and I, we were in the car and we were listening to Charlie's sex podcast with Molly, as one does. We're obviously big fans. And Charlie said that 69 is bad, and Mitchell and I looked at each other with like open mouths, like, what the hell? 69 is so good. No. Anyways, I had a bone to pick with Charlie the next time I saw her. I literally brought it up.
Does Madeline and Mitchell still live with their parents? Who really knows?
Who really knows? Do we live at the cabin or do we live somewhere else?
I don't really know at this point.
All I have to say is, like, slow is better. Try guy on top.
So that I have his balls laying on my chin?
Well, no.
Listen, I don't think it's gonna happen. It's just, I've just completely scratched that. Actually, Josh asked me the other night if we'd like be into doing that. I flat out said no. I don't like doggy style and I don't like 69. Doggy style for me, you're literally just pumping air in my body so that I just have like a huge queef after.
Oh my gosh.
You pull out. It's not fun. Like, queefing is great. I actually dated a guy once that was like really into queefing and thought that like the more I queefed, the better it felt.
That's hilarious.
I'm not sure why. So like anytime that I would, he would be like, oh yeah, keep going. I know it feels good. I'm like, well, I wouldn't necessarily describe it as feeling good. It's just kind of like air coming out of my vagina. But if you think it feels good, like I'm going to make the noises that you think. It feels good. Like
this is a partnership. Well, and this is actually like a great example of how like sex can mean different things for different people. Like I'm a fan of 69. You are not.
We're never going to agree.
We're never going to agree on this one. And that's okay. And I think that's like, that's one of the good things about having an open dialogue is because you can look at another person and be like, I like this. And if Charlie and I were partners, I would know, okay, 69's a no-go. Maybe on my birthday. I don't know. But like, yeah. So
maybe I'll let you into my butt on my
birthday. Maybe. But yeah, so Mitchell and I like filled out this survey. It was like a survey and it's something that you can do online. Honestly, I'm pretty sure if you were to just Google like kink or like sex questionnaire partner or something or other. Maybe not the something or other part, but we found this website and we filled it out and it was actually like a really fun afternoon. It takes a while to go through it and essentially like says like, okay, list given thing. Would you be comfortable doing this to your partner? Would you be comfortable with your partner doing it to you? And it was a great way to kind of just like open up this, like put everything kind of like out in the open and be like, would you be, and I'm pretty sure if I recall correctly, It wasn't just a straight up yes or no. It was, you had like four options. So it was like very much yes, or like kind of in the middle, don't really care, not really for me, or like hard no. And that was a really great way for us to kind of start that conversation. It was also really hot. So like would definitely recommend. Had some really lovely, amazing hot sex after that. Wow.
It was probably,
I'm recalling it now. No, it wasn't. but yeah, and it was really great because we didn't have to have, like, sometimes these conversations can be comfortable, even for, you know, even for someone who is really comfortable talking about sex, because especially when you're doing it with a partner, there's a lot of feelings wrapped up in this. There's a lot of like questions about desire. You know, we all at the end of the day want to be wanted by our partners, and it can be hard to kind of put out this, you know, I really want to try something, and it's a little outside of what we consider normal. Do you like it or not like it? And sometimes that can really feel like, do you like me or do you not like
me? Yes. Oh my God. I'm so happy that you brought that up.
Yeah.
Because let's bring the conversation back to porn for a little bit. I remember when I started watching porn at a really, really, really young age. I probably shouldn't have been watching porn at that point, but because I had the knowledge that I had at that point, I knew a lot more than someone who hadn't had a conversation with their parents who were really open about that kind of stuff and didn't really know where to throw themselves. So porn can be really dangerous in that aspect. But because I already had that knowledge, and we both know that knowledge is power, especially when it comes with any kind of sexual desires or anything that has to do with sex, I knew what I was getting myself into, if that made sense.
Right.
So when I started watching porn and I continued to watch porn, I realized that what I was attracted to in porn was women. I loved women. I loved watching women. I only looked up lesbian sex. Like when I first looked up porn, it was like naked boys and naked girls, as we know from my last episode. But I really enjoyed watching women. I only ever watched lesbian sex or women, female orgies, or all of that kind of stuff. And that's what turned me on. I didn't like watching men. I didn't want to watch straight porn. It just wasn't something that turned me on. And I only realized later in life why that was. But I remember having this conversation with one of my first sexual partners who felt threatened over the fact that I only liked lesbian porn. He was like, he thought that I was not attracted to him because of this, the fact that I was only watching women in porn. So I had to have a conversation with him in the sense that, and it was someone that actually explained this to me, and said, the reason, actually, I think like the statistic is like 85% of women that watch porn watch lesbian porn.
Yeah, like
women,
I would say a lot of the girlfriends that I have who are open talking about kind of porn they like to view, I would say a large majority of them are, you know, frequent lesbian porn watchers.
Yeah.
And the thing is that this is like another little tidbit that I learned while I was in school, is that the stereotypical like Pornhub porn industry is very male dominated. The directors are male, the producers are male. Those films are made for the male gaze. They're made for men. And so that's why a lot of like heterosexual porn isn't super attractive for a lot of women, because a lot of us are more interested in the more emotional side of sexuality. And I think sometimes female on female porn or lesbian porn really appeals to that part of us. And I actually was lucky enough to have a classmate who, she is a director, a producer, and a performer in lesbian, or not lesbian porn, in feminist porn. And that's the whole genre that I didn't even realize existed. And once I found that, that was really life-changing for me, because suddenly I was watching and consuming pornography that really appealed to my sexuality. There was like real storylines. there were
not like a plumber showing up to your door.
No, this was like, I would love to call it like smart porn.
Okay.
Which kind of makes me think of like smart pop,
yeah.
Weirdly enough. But like, yeah, I mean, yeah. I love smart pop and I love smart porn. I do. And yeah, like the great part about this is that like I actually watched it, and because I like got to speak with this classmate, and she had shared a bit with the class about her, you know, what the hiring process is like, what consent looks like on set, the way that they keep everyone safe. The way that the performers are compensated.
And that's not always the case.
And that's not always the case. And that's why I loved feminist porn, because I could watch it and enjoy it. And part of that enjoyment was knowing that the people who were, you know, who I was watching were, you know, consenting adults. They were paid fairly for what they were doing. And a lot of the time they enjoyed their work. And that was something that was really important for me to kind of realize, is like in being in these classes, I started to see sex work as something that was really valid.
100%.
Really, really valid, really important work.
Yes, definitely.
And that it was something that I actually really, really supported. And that was coming from a place, you know, before I started university, where I saw that I really did feel like sex work was something that you only did if you absolutely had to. And so it was a really great switch for me to realize that there are a lot of women who are sex workers and they love their jobs. You know, they love their jobs just like I love my job, just like you love your job. Mm-hmm. And it really is, at the end of the day, just a job. And when I learned a little bit more about like the more ethical side of the porn industry and the sex industry, you know, that really changed my tune about how I saw porn and how I consumed porn as well. Now, a lot of the time feminist porn, that I'm speaking of right now, it is not generally found on websites like Pornhub. So you do have to do a little bit more research, and a lot of times, you know, you're paying for, the stuff that you're consuming. And so that's something to consider. Because I think a lot of times like porn is something that people turn to, you know, in a quick moment when they, you know, need a little extra.
I mean, I say quick moment, but then I'm like on page 57.
Yeah.
Before,
and that's,
I find
that's a thing.
That
and like, that's something to consider. Like if you find yourself constantly looking for like that perfect thing and you're just not finding it on these like more traditional, websites, then I would really recommend to start looking into, what is considered like feminist porn. Because there's a lot of it out there. A lot of it's really good. A lot of it's really fun. Yeah. So that's my bit on feminist porn, I guess.
Something else that I actually learned, like, I would say like a few years ago, that I didn't know when I was watching woman on woman porn or girl on girl porn. So someone had told me this, and this makes complete sense. So when you're watching a woman go down on a woman, you know exactly what that feels like.
Yeah.
You know what that feels like. So when you're watching a woman suck a dick, for example, you have no idea what that feels like. So it's really hard for you to be able to relate to that. But you are able to relate to someone, to another. This is just an example, but another woman going down on another woman, it's a lot more relatable in that sense.
Totally. And you know what? There's a lot of situations where, you know, for example, like, again, this whole podcast is going to be like, this might be, you know, too much information. TMI,
Listen,
everyone.
I was talking about sucking dick a while ago, so I think we're good.
Denise, if you're listening to this, I'm so sorry. That's Mitchell's mom.
My mom listens to my podcast too. So every time I have like a sex episode, and she always tells me how good it is afterwards.
Yeah.
They're so good. Thank you so much for this episode.
Yeah. And I mean, like for me, like I don't really mind watching, you know, heterosexual porn, because I feel like I'm a lucky person, and I actually really enjoy going down on my partner. Like I get pleasure from it, and
oh,
I like
too,
I
definitely.
Like feel it.
Yeah.
And so like I definitely watch lesbian porn too. But occasionally like I like to watch like a blowjob porn, because like, You know, I just, I like that. I don't know. It's, and that's the thing. Like, I think having, you know, being open-minded and exploring a little bit can like allow you to learn a little bit more about what you like. And that's one of the reasons why I am like a huge advocate of porn. And I just want to say, like, porn doesn't always necessarily have to be like searching on the internet. Like, there's so many different ways that you can consume pornographic material. For mm-hmm. a long time, when I was a teenager, I loved like erotic literature.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
We're listening.
Oh my
listening
gosh.
To erotic
yes.
literature.
Yes.
Sometimes I'll listen to that on like long drives, and I'm like, okay, like I need to like stop.
I need a moment.
Like, need one of those like little like lipstick vibrators
yes.
that I keep in my purse.
Yeah. And that's a thing. Like, I feel like what I want to encourage anyone listening is that, like, if you're someone who's like, I don't really like porn, you may not like, you know, visual porn, but you might like, you might like reading your porn. You might like hearing your porn. And there's so many ways that you can explore. And so I would really encourage you to like take the time to do that work. And I consider personally masturbation and like self-exploration in this way as like part of my self-care.
Oh, 100%. Me too.
Yeah.
I was just telling someone the other day, like, that it was a good friend that told me this before, how like when she masturbation in the sense of release.
Yes.
Like a stress release.
100%.
And that's how I feel too.
Yeah.
Like, Josh knows that I masturbate. I masturbate on a very regular basis,
yes.
just like I know that he does as well.
Yes.
Because we're both taking care of each other. And like, when I am feeling those feelings, when I'm feeling horny or when I'm feeling those feelings, I am not always going to want sex with another person.
Yes.
I might just want to pleasure myself by myself. And that's okay. That's just part of my self-care routine.
Totally. And I would like to tell everyone listening that I have learned to masturbate in a one-room cabin with my partner. So I don't necessarily have like the ability to close the door. So Mitchell and I have had to have some pretty serious conversations about what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we first moved into the cabin, I was feeling a little bit stressed out because I was like, suddenly I no longer have a door to close, like not even a little bit. And so I had to have that conversation. I was like, look, I'm like dying over here. I'm stressed out. And I like need to masturbate. Like I need to do this for myself. This is part of my self-care. It has been since I was literally like a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's just like something he knows, that when like I go upstairs and I like put a little sheet over the thing, then it's happening. And it, you know what? And I think that that's like a really healthy thing too. Because we now have a really open dialogue about masturbation. And we sometimes even, you know, there's nights where we're both, you know, feeling like we want to have an orgasm. We're feeling horny, but we're not necessarily interested in, you know, giving that energy to one another. And we'll just, you know, we'll masturbate beside each other. And that is like such an amazing thing too.
100%. I've done that too.
Yeah.
It
it's really, really honestly, like the best way I can describe it is cozy.
Yes.
It's so cozy.
Yes. That's a great way to describe
like,
it, honestly.
And it's kind of funny to describe it that way, but yeah, cozy would be the best word. And it does like, it makes me feel closer to him because sometimes I found when I'm like you, when I'm stressed out, like I feel like I want that. There's been times where I've been writing math, like a literal math test. I have a very clear memory of writing a math test and I could feel myself failing this math test. And as I felt the panic of me failing this math test rise, the feeling of wanting to orgasm was also rising. And I was like, please give me the release of just like not feeling this panic anymore.
Do you want me to tell you a story?
Yes, I always do.
Listening to this podcast is going to hear this story too. One time I was in high school and we were in science class and I was never good in science class. Like any like chemistry, biology, physics, like I was not good at any of it. And I was stressed out during a class and I went straight to the bathroom. I asked to go to the bathroom and just did it in the bathroom.
Get it,
myself.
Girl.
Yep. I had a BlackBerry at the time, so I put some porn on my BlackBerry.
I love it.
And that's it. That's what I did. And then I went back and I felt like a stress release. Like,
yeah,
it was a release that came from that.
Yeah. And I mean, there are certain people, like I've talked to Mitchell about how, like, when I'm stressed out, I feel more interested in sex as like a way to relieve that stress. And he's the complete opposite. You know,
I'm also usually the complete opposite as well. When it comes to sex with someone else, when I'm stressed out, I can't, because already I'm stressed out about my work life or whatever it might be. I don't want to put pressure on myself to have to perform, if that makes
totally
sense. And obviously this has come from like some sexual trauma in the past where like I have been put in a spot where like I had to perform when I was stressed out. And I think that's really what triggered that. And sometimes I just need, like, sometimes I'm masturbating, not because I'm horny, just because I need that release.
The release. Totally. And I think you should definitely, like, you should honor that feeling. You know, it's totally like being in tune with your body and what you need. And if that's what you need in that moment, then you should give yourself that, as long as it's, you know, as long as it's an appropriate scenario. I do not recommend like masturbating in public is basically what I'm saying. Not complete public. But yeah, I mean,
maybe in the washroom.
In the washroom
school,
is fine.
High school,
yeah. But yeah, I mean, being able to masturbate next to a partner simultaneously, sometimes it's not necessarily like the sex or like the penetration that I'm after. It's like that feeling of closeness.
Yes.
And I just, 100%. I want that like reconnecting. And so, you know, you can get that from mutual masturbation, 100%. Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have covered so much in this podcast. Oh my God.
I know.
So we're going to finish it off real quick here. But Madeline, how about you tell us where everyone can find you?
Okay. So you can find me on Instagram at Our Little Outpost. That's where Mitchell and I are. There's like a lot of cabin content, couple content on there.
We're probably going to be doing another podcast episode with Madeline and Mitchell talking about cabin life as well.
We'll talk less about sex on that one.
We might talk about sex.
It's the three of us, so we might.
Maybe we'll just like scream anal penetration.
We might do that too.
And so Mitchell's going to be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, again. my personal Instagram is private, but feel free to follow. It's Madeline dot L Taylor on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Madeline, for being here today. This was such an awesome conversation. I cannot wait for you guys to listen. Happy weekend, happy Monday.
Wherever you are in your week,
have a great day. And thank you again, Madeline.
Yeah, I hope this inspired you to do some self-loving.
Self-love, self-care Sunday, self-care every day. All right, see you guys. Have a good week.